Then there was a market for strawberries, and we would start picking strawberries on Monday morning. We'd pick strawberries from sun up to sundown till Saturday at dinner. Bob Martin at Hickory, he'd taken all the strawberries that we had. And the sweet potatoes, he had a house that he cured them, and then we sold them in the spring. And we made a good living, a better living than you make now. Work like you. And I got married then when I was 17, no 18. And we stayed with them a while, and then we moved out to ourselves, and we had one child. And I still helped them to farm, though, because I didn't know nothing about the public works then. And then when we were married, or when our son was 3 years old, he had an accident with his own car. It run over him. He had a bad concussion of the brain, and wasn't able to work for, he worked about 8 years after he got hurt. And it was for 27 years before he died that he didn't do anything on it, just piddled around the house. My husband. And I went to work, and I paid for two homes. I paid for one, and then we sold that one, bought another, we sold that one, and then we built this one. Now I paid for this home every dollar by myself, and wasn't making about $2.50 an hour. And it cost $8,500.
So how long have you been living here?
12 years. We lived here 3 years. We moved here on Christmas Eve, and in 3 years, that Christmas Eve in 3 years, and then in February is when my husband died. So my dad thought I had to go down. They moved to Gastonia, and he thought I had to go down there and live with them. But I just stayed here. I know that's going to have to stay by myself sometime. So I stayed by myself ever since he's been dead 11 years, I think. Stay by myself every night. I don't think anything about it.
So why did your parents decide to move to Gastonia?
Well, when GE was built over here, you see, my baby brother lived down there. And when GE built over here, people was wanting property around here, and all this territory in here. My daddy had 137 acres, I think it was, and they was wanting a property to build on to be near GE. So he just put it up for auction because my brother wanted him to come down there and buy a farm that was close down there that they wanted part of, but they couldn't, buy. So I guess they'll get it all because they're having to take care of Mom and Daddy. Now, Daddy was 91 years old in June, and Mama's 88. She'll be 89 if she lives till December. So you see, I've got a long life family.
Right. You'll probably be
my grandmother, before she lived, to be 89. My daddy's mother. So it's a old family. They live to be old.
Yeah. Well, what do you remember about your grandparents when you were growing up?
Well, I remember them because we lived with them. And anything that I wanted that my daddy couldn't get, my granddaddy got it for me because I was the only girl, I had four brothers, but I was the only girl. So he died when my son was born in July, and he died in November, but he sat on the back porch and rocked that baby. He was starving, and we didn't know what was wrong, way back then. And I was breastfeeding him, and my milk wasn't no good, and the doctors couldn't find it out at all right at first. And he would rock that baby from sun up to sun down, and he had him fought so bad when he she got sick and died, till it was pitiful. But anyhow, they were real good people, and they really helped to take care of us children. Now, I'm not kidding. And my grandma didn't weigh but 95 pounds. She was just a little tiny thing. But grandpa was a huge person. That was my daddy's parents. Now, my mama's parents lived at Cherville, and I never was around them much because I don't like that territory down in there.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I never did like to go down there. As quick as I got big enough that they couldn't make me go, I didn't go.
Uh-huh.
That's the reason I can't stand to see my mom and daddy. I don't like that territory down in there. Well, it's in Dallas. On this side of Dallas a little bit. Well, up Cherville Highway, about a half mile where they live. But I don't know. I don't like that territory at all. I think I'd go crazy if I hadn't stayed out. I don't know. I was born and raised here, right in this territory, and I've always lived here, and I guess that's the reason I feel so, you know, close to it. Now, I have one brother that lives on the other side of Monroe, and then that one that lives at Dallas, and then my older brother lives down here at Conover, and my other brother lives over on Sweetwater Road, and I live here.
What, when you were growing up and you got married and stayed at your home, mm-hmm. How did you meet your husband?
They had a party one night. These friends of mine had a party, and he was there.
Uh-huh.
And this girlfriend of mine and her boyfriend, they said to me, they said, let's go get us something to eat. And I said, no. I said, I've got to go home. My brother was with them. He was 5.5 years younger than me. He had to go with me. They wouldn't let me go by myself. And I said, no, I've got to go home. I've got to take him home, you know. And they said, no. They said, my girlfriend said, let him stay here with my parents till we come back. So that's the way we started. And from that on, then we dated.
And how old were you then?
I was 17, 18 or 18, I guess it was.
Uh-huh.
I never dated till I was 16.
Uh-huh. How long did y'all date before you finally got married?
We started going together in June or July, when I forgot now. And then we got married the next October.
Uh-huh. What did your husband, was he working anywhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he worked in a furniture factory. Made for, helped to make frames.
What plant?
Hickory manufacturing. And he first worked, then he changed and went to the hosier mill running rivers, you know. And then he finally got to where, after he was hurt, had that accident, he got to where he couldn't work at all then, you know. Well, in fact, his mind, the doctor said it was that clotted blood on his brain. You see, back then they didn't know what to do. And said that was what made his mind go blank, you know. And his mind would go blank, and he'd take it, after he had that leak, he'd take some kind of spells. They were, well, the doctors called them epileptic fits, but they weren't. They were something similar to it, but they weren't exactly that. But they said they didn't know what else to call them, you know.
Well, and, was working in furniture a better job, or which was a better job, doing the hosiery work?
Well, now back then, one was about as good as the other. But when one was prospering, the other one would be down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a good year maybe for the furniture one year, and then next year it was good for the hosiery, you know, back then. But now I think it runs about on the level, you know, about as good for one as for the other now. But back then it was, well, long. Right after we got married was when the Depression was. You know, we got married in 28, and it wasn't long after that when the Depression was. And boy, everybody saw it hard then.
Yeah.
But we never did want for anything. I don't know. I guess it's because Daddy lived, you know, had a farm and everything. The farmers back then, I mean, when the Depression was, they're about the only ones that didn't want for nothing. But the ones that worked, you know, at the shops or at the mills and didn't have nothing besides that, they had it rough.
Right.
Yep.
So when did you first start working? How old were you? How many years had you been married?
James, she was 9 years old, 9, 10, 11. I'd been married about 12 years, first I went to work. And I went to work in a hosier mill though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I inspected socks then. And that's been 40 years ago, and would you believe I made more an hour then than I'm making right now, inspecting socks? See, that was on production. And I really could throw it out then. But while I was working there, this place was going bankruptcy because they paid so good.
Uh-huh.
And the people that run it was from Murphy, up in the mountains.
Uh-huh.
And so they didn't realize, you know, what other places paid, I guess, you know, and they paid too much, a lot higher than the others.
Uh-huh.
And so they had to sell it out. And so Red Hafer bought that place out, and he said that he'd take the hands with the machines and all. So I went on down there, you know, and went to work. I wasn't out of work, you know, like that. And I went down there and went to work. But when I got down there, I started pairing. I paired socks down there then. So they put me to getting the samples and all, and I had to do all the sample work and everything. And that's what I've done ever since then. I went to, after when I quit there, I was there 15 years, and then I went to Kaiser Roth. He got sick and his work began to go down, you know, and I had to, because Paul wasn't able to work, I had to work every day.
Why?
And so I went to Kaiser Roth and got a job. My daughter-in-law worked there, and I got a job there. And when I got up there, though, they didn't put me on production there. They just paid me by the hour, and I did the samples and all that. And I worked there 4 years, and I got so sick of that place that of a morning when I'd start to work, I just felt like that I was just going to choke to death if I didn't vomit or something, you know, just dreading to go to it. So we was living up above Sweetwater School and in my husband's old home place, and so Hickory Fry was just down, about a 5-minute walk from where we live. So one evening I come home from work at the hosier mill, and I told my husband, I said, I'm going down there and see if they need any hands. He said, well, you don't know how to do nothing. I was 50 then. He said, you don't know how to do nothing. I said, well, maybe I don't know how to do nothing, but I said, maybe they'll teach me, you know. So I went down there one evening, and I asked them about a job, and they asked me if I knew anything about sewing, and I said, well, I don't know anything about sewing in here, but I said, I make clothes and things at home, you know. So he said, you want to work a notice where you at, don't you? I said, well, it's like this. I said, all that's quitting there and telling them that and been working a notice, I said, they don't let them work a notice, they fire. You know, they won't let them work near the day after they told them. I said, I want to work the week out, and I'm not telling them till, I said, I'm going to come on home Friday evening like I'm going back Saturday morning. And I said, Saturday morning, I'm going to call them and tell them they can give my table to somebody else. I won't be back. He said, well, if you quit us, you won't do us like that, will you? I said, no, I'll work y'all a notice. I said, unless you going to fire me whenever I tell you I'm going to work a notice. So he said, okay. He said, then if you're not going back Saturday morning up there, then we worked a whole lot on Saturday morning. He said, if you're not going back on Saturday morning up there, he said, just come down here Saturday morning. I said, okay, I'll be here. And would you believe, when I went, I knew the girl that was over the sewers, you know, to teach them how to sew and all. Would you believe when I went in down there Saturday morning, this girl, she sat down and she sewed one cushion. She got up from that machine and she said, there it is, Gladys, take it. She said, I know you can do it. And she said, sit down there and start. Now that's the way I learned to sew. They didn't nobody stand over me and tell me what to do and how to do. And so when I got started up there, they put me making samples there. I made samples for every place that I've ever worked. So I make the samples, and I make the, I have to, for all the, you see, it's a home-owned place.
Uh-huh.
And for everybody in the family that wants anything made, I have to make it. They won't let nobody else make it. So I told them the other day, I said, now, if I live till next August, when my birthday is, I said, I'll be 70, and I said, then I said, I'm going to quit whenever I made, you know, the amount that I make. And they said, oh, you won't do it. I said, yes, I am. I said, they better be getting somebody else to do this work, part of it. But I enjoy my work. I really love to sew.
Are you on production
then? No, I'm on power work.
So you can just take it and
leave? Whatever. And whatever, you know, they want done, well, I have to do like that, you know, anything extra or things, repairs and things like that, well, I do them. So, we get along pretty good.
Well, what was it about the working for Kaiser Roth at that hosiery place that was...
Well, it was the overseers or whoever was over you, so overbearing. Mm-hmm. They were just outrageous. I think though, what happened, you see, when I worked for Red Hafer, I worked for him for 15 years. We didn't even have a boss.
Really?
We just had a forelady.
Uh-huh.
And we all done just the same way. We know what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to do it. Nobody bossed us nor nothing. And I think that was really what was wrong. When I went to Kaiser Roth, you know, they were so bossified and so strict and everything, you know, and I wasn't used to it. I think that's what got on the nerves for me. And two, they had a couple up there that was so bad to run to the boss, to the big boss. If you done the least little thing, you would run to him about it, you know, always keeping something stirred up. And I don't like things like that. I think everything ought to go along smooth. Not be no, you know, difficulty between anybody, I don't think. But some people are not satisfied, you know that, unless they got something stirred or an argument or a fuss or something. And while I worked though at Kaiser Roth, they started making leotards, and they put me out there cutting them and sewing them to start with. So I've been into lots of little odds and end things.
You talked before that the work in the hosiery was like tedious.
Well, it is. It's more tedious than the furniture factory. I mean, in other words, your socks are got to be perfect, or they want them perfect before they go out. You know, you have so many shades to pair from, and you can't let a hole go through, or not supposed to let a man go into first class or anything like that. And you see, it takes good eyes, and you got to be on your toes to get everything out whenever you're on production, especially, and trying to make something, you know, and a pair. But I don't know. I just prefer sewing. I don't know why I stayed in the hosiery mill as long as I did, really. You know, it was just dreading the change of jobs. I just don't like to change jobs. And I reckon that's the reason I've been in this furniture place as long as I have. 19 years, the 31st day of July. So, if I stay till next July and stay able to work, why, it'd be 20 years. That, I think, is long enough at one place.
When you were back working as an inspector, that's it, yeah, the first place. Yeah, what was the name of that plant? Cherokee. They call it Cherokee Hosiery Mill. How many people worked there? Oh, about 50 or 75. It wasn't many. Where is that plant? I'm not sure. Well, you know, up there, where you go into Hickory Manufacturing Company, that building there, that's where it was.
But you see, they had the building rented, you know, and they didn't, I guess they've been there about a year, is all.
Did a lot of the women whose husbands worked there in paper manufacturing, did the women work
there? No, they just scattered around different places. I mean, as a usual thing, it never looks like Patty that anybody around here worked their husband and their, you know, and the wife, it doesn't look like that they, you know, work close to where their husbands work to be accommodating, you know, or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
It looks like, you know, that they'd rather be further away or something.
I wonder why.
I don't know. But now, where I'm working now, they lots of wives and husbands works there. Of course, the men are upstairs, you see, in the upholstery department. The women are downstairs. So, they used to wouldn't. I mean, lots of places wouldn't hire man and wife. You know,
really?
No, They just would hire one. They just, you know, I don't know why they're like that, but that's the way they are lots of times.
Well, why did you decide to go and work in hosiery in the first place when you were living
there? Well, I knew when my husband's health began to fail him, I was going to have to do something. So his sisters were loopers, and where they looped at, why they let me go and learn to loop. Well, I went to Holler Hosiery Mill and started working there looping, and I just couldn't do it. I don't know, it was hard on my eyes. You know, I had weak eyes, and it was hard on my eyes, so I quit that, and I said that I was going to find something else, and that's when I found the inspecting job, and went to inspect. And then whenever that mill was sold out and Red Hafer bought it, well, then's when I went to Perrin, and I paired then all the time there for 15 years and got samples and all. And then when I went up to Kaiser Roth, well, I still paired up there. But I prefer Perrin better than I do inspect.
What are the differences?
Well, inspecting, you see, you pulled them on a board and you had to turn them as you pulled them on that board and turned the board to look at them. And the pairing, while you're there on a table, that you just, you have your stacks and bring them over in front of you, you know, and pair them and lay them in pairs and lay them out and put them a dozen in a bunch. And then you lay them off on the board when you get a dozen.
It's like you had to pull on this thing.
Yeah.
Is that hard on your arms?
Yeah, that's hard on your arms, you know, till you get used to it. Now, if you get used to it, you don't mind it, but it makes you awful sore to get used to it. But,
Well, at the Cherokee Hosiery, did they have a floor lady there?
No, they had a boss there.
They had a
man that was over there. The man that owned it, he had an office upstairs that he stayed in all the time.
Did you know him?
I learned to know him.
What kind of man? What was he like?
Well, he seemed to be a good guy, really. He was big-hearted. I mean, he believed in giving you a fair deal, you know. He didn't believe in, well, I don't know how you'd put it.
Oh, is this the guy from Murphy?
Yeah. He just didn't believe in making a slave out of you and not giving you nothing for it, you know. He believed in. Now, I think that's the reason they went first busted, because he paid too much, his hands too much, according to what the other places paid.
What was his name?
Richard Parker.
Is he still around town?
I don't know whether he's here in Hickory yet or not. I've not heard nothing from him in a long time. So I don't know whether he's still here or whether he went back home or what's happened to him, you know.
So Red Hafer bought the land after. Is that the name of a string of hosiery mills, Red Hafer?
No, that was the man that owned that one. See, it was a home-owned plant, too.
Oh, okay.
But he's dead now. He died over years back.
What was he like?
He was a good guy to work for. He was real good. He didn't bother his hands whatsoever. As long as you done what you were supposed to, you didn't know that he was anywhere around. He was real good. And I guess that's the reason he thought he didn't need no bosses over us, you know, because everybody went on about their business and done what they're supposed to, you know, and we got along just fine without anybody, you know, being over us like that.
What's the difference between what a boss would do and what a floor lady would do?
Well, a floor lady works, and a boss thinks they ain't supposed to do nothing but boss. That's the best way I can put it, you know. But she worked just like we did. She just saw that the work got out, you know. But that was it.
Because I was thinking a floor lady was just like a woman boss.
It's not really, no. Because now where I'm at in the furniture place, I have a woman for a boss. And then we have this girl that gives out our work and everything. So there's difference there. Because the one that gives out our work and all, she can't tell us to go home unless the boss tells her, or she can't tell us, you know, anything unless she tells her to tell us. So I guess that's the difference in you.
Would you rather work under a woman boss or...
No, I'd rather have a man boss, really.
What's the difference?
Well, a man is more firm and distinct about it, and a woman is too partiality. Now that's the difference. A woman has got her friends or her pets, and that's it. You know, you just... And a man, I think, is more firm about anything, that you really know when he means it and when he don't. And a woman, I don't know, they just can't be as firm as a man can. I don't know why, but they can't. I guess it's because you're a woman. I'm a woman. I don't know. Maybe that's it.
I guess.
I'm supposed
to
have a woman
fall. Well, when you were, I'm gonna go back to like the first one that you did, the inspecting, right? You did moving.
Yes.
How long did you move?
Oh, about 6 weeks. It's not in loop very long.
And you learned with some of your friends?
Some of my sister-in-law learned me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. See, back then they let you, I mean, if you didn't wanna, you know, demand pay or anything to learn, they'd let you just come in a plant and watch them, you know, and let you sit down and try it and all back then. But they won't do that now.
How many hours did you work when you first went in? How many hours a day did you work?
I think we worked 10 then.
Was this before the 8-hour law and all those kind of?
Yeah.
So, I want to go back even before you started working, back to like during the Depression. Your family was a farm.
They were a farm family.
Mm-hmm. And so they were able to make it.
They made it okay.
Uh-huh. And that you were married then?
I was married then, yes. But we didn't want for anything, you see, because we didn't have no food ourselves. My daddy gave it to us. He raised his meat. He had his cows for his milk, raised chickens for the eggs, you know, everything. They didn't buy anything, unless it was sugar or something like coffee. That's about all, you see, because they had their lard when they butchered, you know, they made it, rendered out the lard. So they had everything.
How often would your husband get to work during this time?
Well, he'd get to work maybe 1 week out of two or three, you know. They would take the turns about, you know, for him to work. And it was still pretty bad. I mean, it was real bad when he was in the hospital. And you see, that during that time is when he was hurt. And back then, when he was in the hospital, 10 days and 10 nights, and his hospital bill was $125. Then. And 2 years ago when I was in the hospital, had my operation, my hospital bill, like $200, being
$7,000. Oh my goodness.
Now, isn't this some changes made? I tell you, it's ridiculous.
Where did y'all get the money to pay that bill that you had to make?
We borrowed it from this old man that had a farm on up here. You know where that nursing home is? The nursing home off of Tate Boulevard up here.
Yeah.
Up on the hill. Well, this old man, he had a farm in there. And he had some money saved up. And my daddy went and borrowed it from him to pay the bill till my husband got able to go to work and make it to pay it back. He gave him a note, you know, for a year, and in a year's time when we paid it back.
So this was just shortly after y'all got married?
Yeah, 3 years. Yeah, it's been nip and tip with me all my life. I've always had to work and do this and do that. And if we had a home, I had to, you know, work to pay for it. I don't know how I struggled through it all, but I did.
Did your parents ever do any public work, or were they always farmers?
No, they always were farmers. Well, my daddy, he logged some, you know, drug logs for this sawmill, but that was, you know, natural for a farmer to do whenever there wasn't no farm work to be done, you know, in the winter time.
So he could make him some extra money.
Extra money, you know, so that's all they ever did. My mama never did work a day away from home in her life.
So if you had your grandparents, were your grandmother was kind of responsible for looking after the kids?
Well, they did it more or less together. Uh-huh. Grandma would do, she would do the housework, and Mama would go to the field, you see, and help in the field. And Grandma would do the cooking, and then she'd go to the field in the afternoons. So, I don't know, it was just the routine that everybody did, you know, then. And you just don't, I don't know, you just don't think how it would be, really, till you live through it.
Yeah.
Well, now, he worked at a filling station before he got married.
Uh-huh.
And then when he got married, they had their home that they moved into, you know, when he got married. And then I was next. And then my other brother, oh gosh, I don't know, it was years that he didn't get married.
Uh-huh. And did he live at home all this time?
Well, when he wasn't in service, you see, he was in service for how many years. And then when he'd get out of service, he'd come back home, and he'd work, you know, at filling stations and haul produce for people and things like that. Then he finally got married, and I never did see his first wife. Now, you might think this is a story, but I didn't. He got married, and this one man told him, he says, "Now, you're going to marry that girl," and he says, "You don't know what she does when you're..." She worked on second shift, and he is at home, and says, "You don't know what she does when she's working." So he, you know, he thought, well, it was all right. He trusted her, you know. So this boy that had told him that, one night he seen her and this man somewhere. And so he goes and gets my brother, takes my brother, and shows, you know, to my brother where they're at. And he saw that. He didn't do a thing. He went and got his clothes and all and come home. So about 1 o'clock when she went home, he wasn't there, so she come down to my parents' house and knocking on the door, you know, wanting to know if he was there. And Daddy told her yes, he was there, but he wasn't wanting to see her. And would you believe that's the last that there's anything to that. She got her divorce and that was it. And then he, in years, about 3 or 4 years while he got married again.
Uh-huh.
And then he had he's got 3-4 children.
Uh-huh.
He has a boy and 3 girls.
And so what did he end up doing?
Well, he went to GE over here working.
Uh-huh.
He worked at GE until he retired. He retired when he was 62. And he has a used car lot now that he messes with, you know, and all, and just piddles about. Well, on Friday, before my husband died on Sunday, why, his wife just walked off and left him.
Uh-huh.
She left him for another man. And so he had this 5-year-old girl. I mean, that was the baby. And would you believe he raised her? He raised that kid. And, well, she's like 1 year to be through high school. But two of his children are married, and one lives at home with him. And so that's just the way that is. I mean, you know.
What did he do before he went to work for GE?
Just odd and end jobs. I mean, worked at service stations and hauled produce for people and all things like that.
So you were really the only one in the family that ever went to work in a plant or a...
Yeah, really. Now, my baby brother, he used to work in a hosier mill before he went into service.
Uh-huh.
But he wasn't old enough to work not too long before he had to go into service. He worked a couple of years. And then after he come back out of service, he worked in Dallas. I mean, he moved down there to Dallas in some kind of a steel plant or something, you know. And now he has one of his own that he operates by himself now. He doesn't work for nobody.
A little place in his back?
No, he's down on the Gastonia Highway.
Does he have anybody working for him?
Oh, yeah. He has people working for him. I don't know how many or anything. Uh-huh. And then my other brother, he is in service. Oh, mercy. I don't know how many years. He's in penny mob. Uh-huh. And he was going to make a career of it. And then he finally got married. And he come out. He didn't make a career of it. He come out. And then he went to work for this big company in Charlotte, the steel construction place, you know. And so now he's the boss over these over people at these different places. And they send him here, there, and everywhere. And but his original, I mean, where they... His home is out from Monroe, and his wife goes with him part of the time, and part of the time she stays at home. But all their children are married, all but the baby boy. He's still at, well, he's not at home either. I reckon he's helping his daddy. I mean, he works for his daddy. So,
what did your mother think about you going out and getting a job, or what did you?
They didn't say anything about it because they know that I had to.
Uh-huh.
And Paul, you know, right to where he couldn't keep the job while, uh-huh. you know, they knew I was going to have to do something.
Uh-huh.
So I started and that was it. I mean, we've never had no help from nobody.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, after he got disabled to work, do you believe I never could get no disability for him? You know, that law come out. You know that law come out after you was 50, and if you was disability, you could get it. Well, I could never did get nothing for him. Of course, he died when he was 58, but still, if I could have gotten something from the time he was 50 till then, you know, I had a little bit of background maybe, you know, but we just lived from one payday to the next. And I borrowed money to, you know, to do things that we wanted to do. And then I pay it back in payments.
Uh-huh.
So that's the way I got through the world.
Uh-huh.
And it looks like I'm still having to struggle.
Right.
Because Social Security will not, I can't make enough from them. They won't pay me enough that I can, as high as things is, that I could make it if I'd quit work altogether. But now I'm planning on it. If I can work what I can work next year and then draw all my money and save part of it, well, maybe then I can, you know, make it on my own. You see, when I become 65 at Hickory Fry, you want some more?
This is fine. I like to chew that.
When I become 65 up there, they had a pension plan for it. And I got my pension then. But you see, then I had to go into the hospital and such a big bill and everything, and I said I didn't have nothing to save from that because I had to use it, you know, to do them things with. So I said I had to work and make me a little, and it's a hard matter to work and not make no more than I make an hour and save anything. You just can hardly do it and keep up a home, you know, and everything.
So do you work full, like the whole year full time now?
Yeah, I'm still working full time now. Now, I'm going to this year, but next year, well, it'll take me till... Now, I've worked all year, full-time, and I still haven't made $4,000. So, you see, it'll take me till... Let's see, this is all the September. It'll take, anyhow, October for me to make $4,500, you know. And you make that much and then draw all your money for the year, too. So I said I'd have to work a full year about and all, you know, to get it.
Yeah. I was thinking, gosh, you've been there so long, 20 years.
Yeah, but they just don't pay. Now, you could come up there and get a job and they'd probably start you out at more than they're paying me right now. Mm. Now, that's the way
they seem very fair.
It's not fair, really. That's the way they're doing, though. That's the way they do. Now, because it's been about 2 years ago, they hired these two girls in there, and they didn't have more sense than tell us what they started them out at. They started them out at 10 cents more on hour than this paying me. And I've been there all that time. Well, honey, when I started working there, they started me out. Now, I quit the hosier mill, and I was making $2.40 in the hosier mill an hour.
And that was good then.
That was good then. They started me out at $1 an hour. They worked me 1 year for a dollar an hour. And when that year, I never did ask for a raise, though. That's one thing I never asked for. When that year was up, while they come to me, the man that owned the shop, he come to me, or the one of the owners, you know, and one of the fat in the family, he come to me and he said, "We watched you work and do your work," and he said, "We think you're excellent," and he said, "We're going to give you 20 cents more on the hour, $1.20. So they would give me no raises, you know, like that, but I don't know. I said, when I should have had. Now, since I've retired, been old enough to retire, they've raised me enough that if they would have paid me that much when they, you know, counted my for my Social Security, I would have dropped lots more, you see. But you see, the years that they counted from, I didn't make enough to be out.
That's right.
So that makes it rough.
So you never asked for a raise?
I've never asked for a raise, That's one thing I've never done.
What? Why?
I don't know. I reckon chicken or something. Uh-huh. I don't know what. But you know, lots of people, they think they got to have a raise every little bit.
Oh, really?
But they usually give us a raise once a year. And I never do say nothing about it. It might not be the 5 cents, but every 5 cent counts, you know. But I never did ask for a raise. It just didn't bother me like that. But,
well, when you first were, I guess, in the Cherokee, hosiery mill, did you have any friends there?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, Lord, yeah. I've had worlds of friends everywhere I've been.
Uh-huh.
I made friends with the rank of stranger.
Would y'all do anything after work together with your friends?
Well, lots of times they would come home with me or something like that. You know, I hardly ever went home with any of them because I felt like my duty was to come home where Paul, you know, because he wasn't able to do nothing at work. But they would come home and we would, you know, have something to drink and eat something or something like that. I'd have cake made or something like that. Just talk. Monday was my birthday. And I got the most pretty gifts and all. I told those girls up there, I said, I didn't think that there's anybody in here thought that much of me. Some of them went together and got me a pretty locket.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, I just didn't think y'all thought that much of me. They said, well, you just don't know how much we do think of you. I said, well, you better be a thinking it now because one of these days I won't be around for you to think about me. But, I can make friends. I can be friends with anybody if they'll give me a half a chance. But you know, son, you can't be friends with lots of people. They won't let you. But I think, I mean, that's what I told them up there the other day. I told them that was just like a big family to me up there at the shop because I've been there so long. And of course, naturally, they some that I like better than others. I'll have to be frank about that because some of them you can't get along with and you have to more or less just pace and repace and leave them alone the rest of the time. But some of them, they're just like a sister, you know. Because I said I'd never had a sister. I didn't know what a sister was like, but I knew some of them was better to me than a sister would ever been. Because some sisters that I know, they fight and fuss and go on like dogs and cats. So I said that I figured we got along better than sisters.
Well, when you were working in a hosiery plant, especially, I guess, when you were inspecting, how many years did you inspect?
About three years.
Was there any like competition for among people for the best work?
Yes. Some of them knew they could look, see the sack and the number on it, now, and they'd know who looped it.
Uh huh.
And you see, they would work to get that sack of work. You see, yes, there's plenty of competition there.
So they could tell.
They could tell. You see. a good looper. Didn't have no looper hose, you see. And, but I never did. I've never been like that, to want to get the best work, because I don't think it's fair to the other person for one to get all the good work. Now, that's where I don't think that, you know, I think a good boss would come in good there to not let them do like that.
Uh-huh.
But they do them things.
Mm-hmm.
And now, up there where I'm at,
uh-huh.
This girl that gives the work out, she knows what sews good, she knows what sews bad. And you better believe she's got some pets that she gives the good work to, and others that has to do all the bad work. And I'm usually one that has to do all the bad work. This girl, I don't know where she went today, but sews the same kind of work that I do. She sewed the cushion yesterday that had a made border that went in it. Well, the pillows that went in it, they had a zipper in them. And then they pleated on each side of that where that zipper went in them. They had a box pleat and a box pleat on each corner. You had to start your welt where that zipper was and zip and welt that thing together and put it together that your zipper would be just like that,
uh-huh.
You know, when it was open, I mean at the end of the pillow,
right.
That it would be right tied shut. And she left all three of them pillows for me to do, and I had two sets of them yesterday. But I had a set like that again today, and they was quilted cotton, the ones were today.
Uh-huh.
And now that's the way they do me, but I just work, I've got the stove, I just work and say nothing about it, because I know I ain't going to be there always to take it. Somebody else will get that work whenever I'm gone. It won't be me doing it, so they'll have a day of coming. So I'm not going to worry about it.
Well, when you were working back, or, you know, early, what if you had complaints or something, you know, about, I don't know, just anything, what would you do about it?
Well, back when I was in the hosiery mill now, not down at Red Hafer's, but after I went to Kaiser Roth,
uh-huh.
They would inspect, you know, you pared your lofts,
uh-huh.
And you'd put them on, well, some of them would have as high as 50 dozen in them. Well, you'd put them all on the board, you know, and stack them up, five one way and then five another, you know, like that. And they would stack way up. Well, then they would go, you know, to be transferred and stamped and all like that, you know, be put in boxes. Be shit. Well, if them girls would find too many holes or something, excuse me.
Let me get you some more of
them. Oh, I'm fine. I'm really. I've got some. Oh, okay.
How are you going to start?
I think we're at Kaiser Roth.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where you're at. But I forgot now what you'd asked me.
About?
Oh, yeah, about the work.
Uh-huh.
And whenever they'd start to put the labels and transfers and all that on, they'd find holes. They wouldn't do nothing, but they'd just stack that lot back up. If they'd find a hole or two holes in the first few dozen, they'd stack that lot all back up. It'd come back to the pairing department, and it'd have to be inspected again. Have to go through it again. But now, I never did have to do none over, but lots of them did. And one time, they got me out there going through all these that these others had paired, because I was on our work then, you see. I wasn't on production because I'd done the samples and all.
Uh-huh.
And they got me out there going through them, and they were paired terrible. I mean, they had holes paired in, and they had men places paired in. They were, you know, they were seconds and thirds and everything paired together in the first.
Right.
So you see, if they didn't check it like that, why, you know, that lots of bad work would have went out.
So a pairer is like the second person that would kind of inspect.
Yeah.
They would inspect.
Inspect.
Well, the inspector.
Yeah.
Right. Well, when y'all were working, and if something on the job went wrong, like maybe somebody wasn't pulling their load, or you had just something you wanted to complain about, who would you take your complaint to?
Well, to the boss or whoever, you know,
uh-huh.
Whoever it was that was over, that's
uh-huh.
Who you'd go to.
Like, how about when you were first working for the man from Murphy?
We had to go to him.
You go to him?
Yeah. We had any complaints, we had to go to him.
Right. And then when Red Hafer bought the place, would you go to Red Hafer or would you go to your floor lady?
I went to the floor lady then. I wouldn't go to him. Well, I don't know why, but I just always would tell her, you know, whenever I find something wrong or something, I'd always just tell her. She would, you know, see it through them from there on.
Would anybody go over her head like and go up?
No.
She'd
always just go on to him, you know, about it or something if she couldn't straighten it out herself. So that's the way it would go.
Well, when you were working throughout your work life, have you ever been in contact with any union organizers?
No. Well, now, one time when I worked for Red Hafer, he shut down one whole summer on account of the union and trying to get us the votes, you know, for the union to come in. And he just shut his place down. But because Paul wasn't able to work, he let me work, and he had three women that was in different departments, you know, that was the floor lady, and he let them work, and I worked with him. That summer, we just cleaned up odds and ends and all like that, you know, and straightened the place out more or less. And then after it died down about the union, why, he started back up in full swing again.
About what time was this?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have no idea, really.
What, did you ever see these people coming in?
No.
I just want to
wait. No, it was one of the men that worked for him is who they contacted, and he's the one that tried to get the people, you know, say that they would vote if they, you know, had a voting time. But when Red got a whiff of it, you know, that's what was going to happen. He just closed the plant down.
Did this guy get fired?
Yeah, he didn't get to come back when he started back up. Hafer said that he didn't want nobody working for him like that. Now, I tell you, talking about the union, this GE plant over here, there ain't no way I'd vote for a union. No way in this world, after I saw how they acted and done belonging to the union.
What did they do?
Throw tax in the road, knock people's car lights, windows out, and all those things. Just rude.
Would this be while they were on strike or something up here?
Yeah, they used to pick it right up there at the entrance to the plant. And one morning I got up, I knew that there'd been an awful racket all night long, but I didn't know what it was. And I got up one morning, now you won't believe this, but the cars was parked all the way back down here to my mailbox on both sides of this road down this way. And I knowed right then something was happening. I mean, I know they was up there, you know, and I could hear them hollering and the cussing people, you know, that was going by and this and that and all. And I didn't do a thing, but I got on the telephone and I called the law. And I told them, I said, I'll tell you one thing. I said, they're using all kinds of vulgar language up here. And I said, it's not fit for people to be around to hear. And I said, if y'all are any law at all, you'll get up here and you'll straighten it out. That man said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, the law's up there. I said, well, the law ain't a-doing nothing then. He said, the law can't do nothing with all that many people. He said, if they do something, if they see one do something that they know, you know, that's wrong, said they can't arrest him, but said for that person, he said, that's all of them, and he said, they ain't no way to do nothing about that. Oh, that one time, they were really wicked. I was even scared to go up out past them to go to my work, really. I'd ride with somebody else, you know, but I was scared to go. And I used to go right up there and stand and wait for my ride. But after they had that awful strike like that, I didn't go up there another day and stand for my ride. I had a friend that lived straight up here on the road, and I went up to her house and stood and waited on them for the ride. But that one time that they struck, that was awful sight. And all that I've ever heard and seen. Now, I'm not telling you no story.
Well, do you think that unions ever had, were they always like these people up here?
Well, that's what I wonder. Now, you know, I know there's other unionized places around here, but you've never heard tell of stuff happening like it has up here. Now, this friend of mine that works at the Central Telephone at Hickory, she said that one time they struck up there and they had a mess just kind of like they had up here. And she said, well, she stayed at home. She wasn't in on it. She said she told them that she didn't belong to it. She told them she wasn't coming and trying to come get into the doors to work, and them up there acting like they was acting. So she just stayed at home. But I think I would be scared to death myself to work around a place that has a union, because, I mean, if they act like these all these people act, because I'd be scared to knock me in the head.
Yeah.
But they would get fierce. And you know, this building right out here is the union hall.
Yeah, I knew it. I had seen the sign when I drove by your house one day. Yeah,
that's the union hall.
Well, did you hear anything about those, like back in the 30s, they had those strikes over in Gastonia and around here? Did you ever hear anything about that?
I heard about them, but I don't know anything about them, you know, just that they struck. And I think they were pretty rude, too.
Uh-huh. I just wondered...
Let's see, that was the cotton mills, wasn't it?
Right. I just wondered how far news traveled.
Oh, it travels. It travels, all right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you could read about it in the newspaper and
right.
hear it on the radios. But it's not like it is now when you got TV, where you can see all this stuff happening on the TV, you know. But you heard about them things back then, because, I don't know, it just got around.
Well, I wanted to kind of ask a real general question about Hickory. How do you see it changing over the years?
Oh, mercy. Now, that's hard to say there. I mean, but, you know, it's not like it used to be whatsoever. You know, it used to be that square in there where they got all that old brick and stuff now. You know, there was a square in there and a road went all the way around.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember.
You remember that, I know.
Yeah.
And you know, so many of the buildings and all, they've torn down and everything. And to me, they just demolished it to me. I mean, you know, if they want to have any, I mean, like, stores and everything, you know, for people to come in and buy, they just don't have them anymore. They don't have many. You know, since Sears is left, and Belk's is left, and Penny's is left, and Woolworth's, and I guess McClellan's is still there. I don't know, is it?
I know Woolworth's is, but I don't
know. Is it Woolworth's?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's McClellan's then that left. I know there's not but one.
Yeah, Woolworth's.
And, you know, Grant's was up there, and it's gone. There just didn't many places really to shop anymore in town, really. I bet you it's been 2 years since I've been uptown. I don't go up there anymore. I usually just sit down right there at the telephone with Sears catalog, but underclothes I have to have and all, and just order them, you know, and don't even go to the store. We'll go to these outlet stores or something like that, but as to go to the mall or anything, I don't care anything about it. But I said the mall has taken the city of Hickory. I mean, all the stores about away from it, really. Yeah. Really, Hickory don't... Well, anybody that hadn't been there in 10 years would never know the place, I don't think.
It has changed a lot.
Oh, it has changed something terrible. And you know, all that block in there where the Fresh Air Market was, you see they tore all that down, but the Fresh Air Market. And
it really has changed a whole lot.
It really isn't the same place whatsoever. And then made a restaurant out of the old depot, taking all those sidetracks out from up there.
Uh-huh.
We got all that mess up here.
Yeah. Is this community called Oyama around here?
No.
What's it called?
I don't know. It's not called anything. They call it Fair Grove Church Road. That's all, you know. But Oh, Amy, just come by, think about to where the railroad is, you know, just like that, because, you know, there used to be a little old station up there on the railroad where they call it, Amy, and people could get on and off the train there.
Uh-huh.
And that's the reason that was called that.
Have you ever ridden on a train?
One time, from Hickory to Newton. I mean that I can remember about riding. Mama used to take us, she said, when we were little, and Daddy had a half-brother in Rock Hill, South Carolina, and she would go down there on the train with us when we were little, but I don't remember it. I was too little. I'm not scared of an automobile, but I don't put too much trust in a train and no trust in an airplane whatsoever. Have you ever ridden a plane?
Yes. Yeah. I felt every time I got in it, I was just happy to get out.
I don't know why, but I've always been skittish in an airplane. And my friend up here, top of the hill, she'll get on a plane and fly to Florida to see her daughter and not think a thing about it. But she said she's going to take me one of these times with her whenever her daughter could bring us back in the car, you know, just fly one way. I said, well, if you never get me on one, you might, but I don't know if you'll ever get me on one or not.
Have you ever taken any big trips? Or trips anywhere?
I have never taken but one trip. And that was, let's see, 2-3 summers ago. This summer, my friend Alice Wilson, she wanted me to go with her to Florida. Her daughter lives in Florida. She wanted me to go with her down there, and she said we'd go to Disney World and all those places. We spent a week that year. It was a year before I got sick that fall, and they had to have my operation on. And we went, and she's not got over here no more now. Now he's called ever since his daddy died every night. He don't go to bed unless he calls to see how I am before he goes to bed. I didn't think about it being him though.
But I knew it must be.
It's bedtime.
Well, I'm about finished. I wanted to ask you what kind of, did you do men's socks when you
were?
That's men's
right, socks.
That's
right. That's all. Yeah, men's socks. I didn't work, I mean, they didn't make ladies' hose where I work, at any of the places. Well, in fact, they don't make them only at certain places. I mean, there's not many places that makes the lady hose, or, you know, like that.
Everybody I've talked to made men's
socks. Now, this friend of mine up here, it was on the end of my tongue, the hosier mill that she worked at Newton, they made ladies' hose, because she boarded them. Well, I know the name of it, but I can't think of it right now. Ridgeview hosier. They made, well, in fact, people goes down there yet and buys them, you know, from the place wholesale, because you can get them cheaper. Yeah, I don't know why they always made men's socks, but that's what it was. And Kaiser Roth, they did make children's socks and all, too. But now they didn't make any children's socks at Red Haven. They were all just men who. But,
well, what I want to do now, I guess, is I've got a form that I want to get down with people's, your last name, and people's last names, and get spellings right and stuff like that.
Garland Bungarner.
was his parents' names?
Robert Bumgarner. And Francis was his mama's name.
And were they farmers?
Yep.
Do you know where they were born?
They were born in this county, I guess. She was a carpenter before she was married.
And where was she born?
She was from Crouse.
Crouse.
I don't know. That's not Gaston County, is it? What county is it?
Lincoln.
It's Lincoln County, I guess.
Do you know if your parents went to school?
Yeah, but I don't know what grades. Well, back when they went to school, I don't think they finished. I mean, I don't think they had those grades like we had. I figure they went as far as they could go, you know. I know my grandma did because they just had the old blue back spell. And she said that that's all that they had. When they finished that, they was through.
Blue back spell.
Yeah, blue back spell.
When you were in school? Did you have the...
We're taking geometry and French, things like that. It's not like it is now.
What
are they taking? No, it's not like it was now. I don't know how kids get by now, really.
What was your husband's name?
Paul Harris. Hey, I keep putting him put his middle initial.
Where was he born?
In this county, Kapala County.
And he worked as a framer?
Mm-hmm.
And what's your son's name?
James H. Harris. I call him James Hugh all the time, but you just put H for the
he works for the
wood carving.
And can I get the address here?
Mine?
Yeah.
Route 2, Box 99, Conover. And the code's 28613.
Where does your parents live now? They live up a little town called Sugar Grove. It's near Boone. Seven minutes. It's cool up there.
Yeah.
This is when I miss living with them.
That's right, isn't it?
What was your date of birth? What year were you born?
1910. It's along there somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because, from what you were telling me about being there and stuff. Okay. Well, I got one last sheet here. Let me write your name in here. That, I told you about the project, the Southern Oral History Project, and that we're putting all the tapes together in kind of like a library.
Mm-hmm.
So we need kind of like your permission to do that.
I don't guess I have any reason to tell you could. I hate that you is interrupted, though, Richard.
Oh, that's fine. It's good to have a rest every
now and then. I could have laid the receiver off because I figured there'd be some calls, but...
Okay, you read after that and see. It's just about putting it in.